sick of crying.
You're tuned to KXCJLP 105.7 FM, Cave Junction. Greetings, and welcome to this week's edition of Valley News and Views, the Illinois Valley's news program. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and with us today in the studio is Executive Director of Women's Crisis Support Team in Grants Pass, Ray Dinkins, and Lindsay Walasek, Prevention Educator. If you have a question or a comment you'd like to share with us during the interview, we invite you to call in at 541-592-4112, that's 592-4112, or email us your questions and comments at news@kxcj.org. So hello to you both, and welcome to Valley News and Views.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Hey, Ray, I'd like to start with you. How'd you come to be involved in this work that's historically and predominantly been done by females?
Sure. I get that question often, and so I'm happy to try and answer that. About 12 years ago, WCST was looking for someone to come on board and start really developing and increasing their prevention program and their outreach into the community. And I had experience both as a teacher and a community organizer. My teaching actually was here at Illinois Valley High School, where I was a school-wide assistant and a biology and chemistry teacher for 3 years. And just the opportunity opened up, and it was a good match. And I was able to join with WCST, and they gave me an avenue to start a school-based violence prevention program, which was kind of cutting edge at the time and still is a little bit on the front lines of changing the dynamics and changing the culture to end violence. And so for the last 10 to 12 years, I've been the prevention coordinator for Women's Crisis Support Team. And then a year and a half ago, our executive director, Chrisanna Albrecht, she was a stalwart in our community and really a mother in terms of raising me up in this work. I've been at her side for so many years, and we had just been doing this work together for so long. When she got ready to retire, she said, I can't think of anyone better or anybody that I'd want to be charged with leading the organization into the future than you. And that was like the greatest, that was the greatest compliment and greatest affirmation of me doing this work than I've ever had. And I, as my, again, as kind of my mentor and my mother in the work, I wanted to follow her, and I wanted to be the next in line, and I want to continue her legacy and the things that she instilled and brought to the agency and to the community through WCST. So that's how we got there.
All right. Well, was there any particular thing that drew you to doing violence prevention work? Were you just interested in doing that, or how did you come to that work? It's kind of unusual work for a lot of people.
It is. I think for me, I love kind of the countercultural aspect, like the analysis that we have of our culture and the way that people are raised in certain roles and with certain stereotypes and boxes that kind of confine them and tell them how they have to be. And I just really like the analysis of that and the idea that we can be different than what people expect us to be, or that even at some level there's some dichotomy. You know, we were talking earlier how for me, I love heavy metal, and I'm a big heavy metal fan, and they get to listen to some heavy metal every morning in my office. And yet, you know, I love the idea of being a peacemaker in our community and carrying that badge and that banner very strongly and building community around that. And so I just think that for me, it's the passion of cultural analysis, like looking at how culture trains us to behave a certain way, how we are supposed to interact with each other a certain way, and how this training exists, this unspoken training exists that doesn't really always lead to peace. It doesn't always lead to community. And kind of working against that and working to undo that and say as like a beacon and a voice of, you know, we can actually live in a community where people get along, and we don't always have to agree on everything, and we don't have to be exactly alike, but we can have this harmony amongst us and celebrate the diversity that exists in our communities without. And so I just love the idea. I just love the idea too of wearing the badge of peacemaker. I've always been personally passionate about that. And so being able to work amongst especially our youth and in our greater community to just encourage people to listen and respect each other and live a more peaceful existence is just pretty much a passion of mine.
All right. Well, kind of segueing into that, Lindsay, I understand that you're a prevention educator for the Ivy High School here in the Valley. So I'm assuming two things. I'm assuming that Ray trained you, and I'm assuming that you work really closely with our domestic violence program here in the Valley, the Ivy Safe House Alliance. So tell me about that partnership.
So Ray did begin training me. I also come from a social work background, so I had a lot of interest in social work, social justice, education for individuals who don't have that benefit, I guess. And as far as working with Illinois Valley Safe House,
that's probably more me, honestly.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I mean,
how long have you been doing this work, Lindsay? So
I started last August, so I've been doing it over a year now.
Oh, well, it's pretty
my
long
second
time.
Year in the schools, yeah.
And you've been director for how long? How many years?
So, how many years? We're still counting the first one.
Oh, okay.
I officially became director in March of this year, March 2019.
Okay.
I was executive director elect for a full year. So I got to work along. The board gifted me this great, amazing opportunity to work alongside Chrisanna as co-executive director for a full year. So I wasn't really doing a lot of prevention work at that time or any other work. I was actually getting executive director training for a full year with Chrisanna before she left.
Uh-huh.
And then she retired officially in March and I became the executive director.
Okay. And so what kinds of partnerships do you have with other programs? I believe there's just a couple of questions here. There's just two programs in Josephine County. And I don't know how rare that is in the country as a whole. I don't know if that's a common thing or if that's a very rare thing or what. So I would think that it would be really useful to have a partnership with both those organizations to do the work. It's a lot of work.
So we are one of, I believe, seven counties in the state, maybe eight, that have dual agencies there are two agencies. The rest of the counties all have a singular agency. And we share the work pretty, it's a pretty amazing partnership, I would say. I have a personal relationship with the executive director there in that I had her son in class when I was a teacher here at Ivy. And so I've known her for that long. And I would consider her also someone who has mentored me up in the work over the many years that I've been on this path. And so I think that we have a great working relationship. Josephine County is so big and so divided in ways. Like, you know, you think about Hayes Hill being between here and Grants Pass, and there are different capacities that each of our agencies have. And so where they're most suited to support individuals here, they take care of that. And when they need additional capacity or work, they can definitely call on us. We're in a space over the last 10 years of developing a prevention program that's really seen in the state as kind of a model for other domestic violence and sexual assault agencies to to work with their schools and partner with their schools. And so it's been kind of a strategic plan of ours to develop a program that serves the whole county. And so our prevention program is currently in all the Three Rivers high schools and soon middle schools, hopefully. And so we wouldn't leave that undone out here. I have a personal passion for the community here because of our previous work here. And so as much as we've done in Grants Pass around prevention work, we've always tried to make an effort here as well. But Susie, who is the director of the Illinois Valley Safe House Alliance, her and I both serve on the DV Council for the county, and we're chair and vice chair, but I kind of consider it co-chair. Both of our agencies work alongside each other very well. I mean, we offer a shelter, and I know that when someone here needs shelter and is able to move from this location to Grants Pass or relocate, that our shelter space is always available for those clients.
How many people can you house?
So our safe shelter is a beautiful 14-bed older home in a residential area in Grants Pass. It's an undisclosed location, so mm-hmm. we maintain that for safety reasons. But it's a lot of people, it's hard because it is a real gem in our community. It is I can't even tell you how amazing this home is. And it's hard to have a place like that and not be able to parade it around the community and show it off. A lot of people, when they think about shelters, probably have a mind, you know, they probably have it in their mind that this idea of like iron beds in a gymnasium kind of thing. And it's nothing like that at all. We used to all be stationed there when we were a smaller staff. And we like to tell people it's a lot like going to grandma's house. It's a beautiful, large home on a residential street. It has a beautiful backyard with play structures for kids. And
can they can people bring their pets?
So we are one of the few pet friendly shelters in the state. Pets are a huge barrier for individuals yes. achieving safety. Pets are often used as a source of power and control by perpetrators. And so we have really worked very hard to reduce barriers. Now, the whole shelter is not pet friendly, so there are limited rooms and limited spaces. And unfortunately, when those are full, if someone can't part with a pet, they may not be shelter appropriate at that time.
Yeah.
But we have fostered pets recently, which I'm very proud of. We're always looking. My goal, and I think it was Chris Anna's all along too, but definitely my goal in terms of access to our services is reducing barriers. And so I'm really happy that you recognize that, like right out of the gate. It's like pets can be a huge barrier to somebody achieving safety, and we don't really often think of that. But our shelter is pet friendly, and
good.
We've had everything from chickens to dogs new kittens and.
Yeah, well, you know, we love our pets.
Yeah, so sure.
They can be manipulated.
They're family.
By that, you know. So, hey, it's time to take a short break. And when we come back, I want to talk to Lindsay a little bit more about what you do as a prevention instructor and where you do it and how you do it and what's important to you. So,
all right.
Oh. Hey, you've tuned back into KXCJLP 105.7 FM here in Cave Junction. We are talking to Lindsay Walasek from Women's Crisis Support Team in Grants Pass. We're talking about domestic violence today, and Lindsay is the prevention educator for the Ivy Valley High School and other high schools around our area. Lindsay, so tell me a little bit about your prevention program. Ray talked about it earlier, you know, said it was a really well acknowledged program and stuff. So tell me a little bit about what your day looks like.
So my day differs day to day between going to all the different schools to going through different curriculums. But what really makes our program work is how we present it. We do have really good material, but our main focus is creating relationships with the teens and the kids and making sure that they have a voice and that they're heard. That makes a huge difference with youth who usually don't get that opportunity. But as far as curriculum goes, we do universal prevention. So we talk about anything from power and control and domestic violence, all the way up to media literacy and cyber safety. We talk about a lot of stuff that doesn't usually get talked about. Some people might think that some of what we talk about is taboo, but it's also very necessary. I personally, when I first started this job, wish I could have gained this education when I was in high school. It probably would have saved me a couple heartaches and downtime. But yeah, so the main focus, what I love most about coming out, especially to Ivy with the smaller school, is being able to just be there for those students and being able to listen, and they can just talk about anything, whether it's serious or if they got a new dog.
Mm-hmm. So what other schools do you also go to? And how many prevention coordinators are there at Women's Crisis?
So I'm not the prevention coordinator. So I'm a prevention educator. That's okay. Amy Harbel is our coordinator. So I'm at Illinois Valley for two freshman classes and our Upper Wings 2 program, which is voluntary, and it goes all year, whereas our freshman classes are for a semester, and they're required in their health class.
That's great.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, so that's really cool. So then we get all the freshmen, and we usually hook them, and then they come back for the next year. So that's been cool getting that started with Illinois Valley. We're on to Wings 2 now. So we're picking that up. So I'm at Illinois Valley, Hidden Valley, North Valley, South Middle School, and G-Pass. I start this Friday at Gladiola.
Oh, right.
We're also at North Middle School and then Grants Pass High School as well. So we're putting our boots down on the ground all around.
And so is there another educator in addition to you, or are you the only one that's going around?
I actually can multiply my... No, I'm just kidding. yes, there is. So Amy, our coordinator, she teaches classes. We have a part-time individual, Dennis, who's wonderful. He is failing at retirement, but he's a good educator. And then we have a more recent hire who is also a prevention educator.
All right. I wish I would have had a program like that too when I was in high school, because I think it's super critical to get to people young and early and say, this is what's happening. Because many times I think in people's homes, they don't know what's normal or what's healthy and what's not healthy. Not normal, but you know, mm-hmm. The way I was raised, I thought a lot of things were healthy that weren't. And it would have been good to have a little bit of a heads up about those red flags. So I kind of wanted to talk to you a little bit about what the messaging is for the kids. Like, what do you think is the most important messages to get across to youth about the potential of being in an abusive relationship? Because of course, in the beginning, it doesn't seem like it's going to be an abusive relationship. So what are some of those early warning signs that somebody listening today could look for?
Yeah, most definitely. I think that's probably one of the most important things that we do talk to the youth about. So a couple warning signs could be somebody that's isolating somebody, whether that's from your friends or family. It could look like somebody over texting you chronically. It could be
jealousy is not love.
Jealousy
is not love. You know, there's just it's really interesting because the opportunity to just go in and speak to the kids about this, they begin to popcorn ideas, and they also begin to share their own experiences, and they begin to kind of help each other in that. And so it's fascinating when students get an opportunity to talk about the things that they're experiencing. They very quickly identify like, oh, that doesn't feel really good. You know, and it's given them the freedom to kind of to have an environment where they can say, well, this is happening and I'm not sure. And when they get the opportunity to speak, and we don't always know the answers, well, we'll say, well, you know, how does everybody feel about that? Or what does everyone think about that? They begin to really get a sense, because sometimes, you know, you could say, well, excessive texting is not healthy. And I would say in most cases, it's not. In some cases, it may be, because there may be something going on that really needs to be taken care of. And so the beauty is, though, not necessarily that you're telling them what's right or wrong, but that they're beginning to think about it. What do I want in a relationship? How do I want to be treated? What do I signal? You know, what is healthy boundaries? And so I think a lot of the times we're helping students start to think about those things for the very first time. And very much like what you and Lindsay both expressed, and myself as well, everybody always says, oh, I wish I'd have had that when I was in, you know, when I was younger. It's interesting. The drive into the middle schools has actually come from the high schoolers who have asked us, where were you in seventh grade? Oh, wow. I needed this conversation. And so they're actually taking it back to their administrators and saying, we got to get some younger folks involved in this, because I was making decisions that I wasn't equipped to make. And I didn't have people that I could talk to. And now that I'm having these opportunities to talk about it, I would have decided some things differently, you know, or I want this for, we get a lot of older siblings saying, oh, I want this for my younger sibling really, really badly because it's so important. And so while we do help students identify some major red flags, possessiveness, jealousy, controlling behaviors, and then what we want to try and really not do, though, is run to the extreme example, because it's really easy. Well, people can say, she hit her, you know, they were in that relationship and she hit her, so that's a bad relationship. And we're like, well, of course that's a bad relationship, but were there things going on before that that we can identify that may have been unhealthy, that we could correct before we get to that kind of place, or that we could say, you know, this isn't the relationship I had in mind, or this isn't what I want in a relationship. Because I think a lot of times, especially early on when young people are experimenting in relationships, they just haven't really taken the time to think about what they want in the relationship and what constitutes health for them. And so I think what WINGS does, and WINGS is actually an acronym for Where Individuals Navigate Growth and Safety. It's an opportunity to talk about and for students to just slow down for a minute and say, well, you know, this looks healthy to me in a relationship, and this is what I want in a relationship, and these are the things that I don't want. And all of a sudden you see kind of a transformation. A lot of times kids are able to go back to their partners and say, you know, this is really unhealthy and I want to change the way we do some things. Mm-hmm. I've also been labeled the guy who breaks everybody up, because they come to the class and they realize they're in an unhealthy relationship and they want to do something different.
So just going off of that also, we're constantly surrounded by media that is showing unhealthy relationships and unhealthy messages. So that's a huge thing. We see students coming in and saying, well, this is the norm, but it's crafted as a visual for them.
Yeah. How many students would you estimate, like, the WINGS program reaches, and then how many students are involved in the mandatory one?
So last year we served 925 students. And as far as the mandatory, so Hidden Valley has four freshman classes second semester. Illinois Valley has to now, and then one second semester. North Valley has two freshman classes this year, or this semester, as well as two next semester. So the whole freshman class, I don't necessarily know what the numbers are. It varies day to day, depending on attendance or if some opt out or
yeah. What would you guess though? What would you estimate? Any idea?
Right now, I'd say we're probably serving 250, 300.
Wow, that's great. So, and Ray, you have something?
I was just going to say, we usually are able to reach about 1,000 unduplicated students a year across both school districts and multiple high schools and middle schools. And those students, again, you know, we have three levels of wings. So the mandatory class, which is in the health classes, which you are appreciative of, the school districts have really really open the doors for that to happen. And we just kind of consider that where we're planting seeds. So if you think of the three levels of our WINGS programming, it's designed to instill knowledge and then change attitudes and then develop skills. And so WINGS 1 is just all about that knowledge. It's really kind of a class structure. We try and be as interactive as we can, but it's in the health class and we're really just passing along knowledge. And then we invite those students to join us anytime, like the year after they're in Wings 1, they can join Wings 2. And it's voluntary where we show up at the school at a given time of the day and they are allowed out of class. And in that class, we really talk about like, how are you using the knowledge that you've had to, how has it affected your life? How has it changed your attitudes? How are you developing better relationships? And how is that carrying forward? And then the third level is our youth action team. That's Wings 3. And after you've been in Wings 1 and Wings 2, you can join Wings 3. And that's where students actually, we've taken students to talk to legislators in the state. They've gone and taught other schools. They've gone and done a lot of different work. So it's really all about knowledge, attitude, and skills. And I think, again, we've reached 1,000 students a year, basically. And I would say probably a good half of those are in Wings 1, that mandatory class. And then Wings 2 and Wings 3 are probably the other 50% split pretty evenly.
All right. That's a good overview of that. It's time for another break, you guys, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about your shelter, Women's Crisis Support Team, move off of the, more into the outreach that you do in the community apart from the youth, and also, I want to remind our listeners that next week, we're going to be hosting a special segment on intimate partner violence from the local perspective. Please join us Monday, October 21st. From 11 until noon for an in-depth interview with our local program, the Ivy Safe House Alliance. In the studio with me then will be IVSHA's Executive Director, Susie Elwood, and Advocate Angie Graves. We'll be right back after the break. Thanks for listening. Oh, and don't forget, questions and concerns or just comments, 592-4112, or email us at news@kxcj.org. Welcome back to Valley News and Views, KXCJ's only local news program. In the studio with us today are two representatives of Women's Crisis Support Team, Ray Dinkle, who is the ED, and Lindsay Wolosek, Prevention Educator.
Dinkins.
Oh, what did I say?
Dinkins. It's okay. I can be Dinkle for tonight.
Dear. And I even have it printed properly here. I just, I don't know where that came
all
from.
Good.
Many apologies. So we were just talking about the number of people that you serve in your prevention programs. And I want to move on to how many victims do you serve in your organization as a whole, including the shelter, and I'd like to know a little bit about the shelter, wait times, that kind of thing. How many people are you actually able to accommodate that come through your door on a daily basis? Are you able to put them up into a safe place, or is it kind of a wait for that, or what? So how many survivors do you work with?
Well, first, I'd like to say, as we get into this part of the programming, too, and it's probably something I should have started with, you know, the conversations around domestic violence can be difficult, and even just bringing it up can be triggering for some people. And I want to make sure that if folks are triggered in our conversation or come to a realization that they might need some help, that they know where to reach out to. And so our 24-hour crisis line number is 541-479-9349. And people can call that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and speak to somebody at the other end and just talk about what's going on with them. It can be completely confidential, but I want to make sure as we enter into a conversation about the resources that are available, that is available to the community. The Women's Crisis Support Team, we run three major programs. So we have our intervention team, our shelter team, and our prevention team. And our services are for the whole county. So we serve all of Josephine County. As you've heard, Lindsay, we're in all of the Three River School District schools, and we serve all the way from Glendale down to the California border. We serve Rogue River, which is actually, you know, across the line into Jackson County. And so we serve a large geographical area, and we're happy to help anyone in Josephine County around the issues of domestic violence or sexual assault. That said, our crisis line, we answer roughly 3,500 to 4,000 calls annually to our crisis line. A majority of those are dedicated to domestic violence, and those are not teased out. Those can be duplicate calls. So you may call and ask a question about a situation, but not ready to receive help, and then call again, and we would count that again. There's just not a real way to tease out phone calls as unduplicated. So a majority of those are dedicated to domestic violence. There's a smaller portion of those dedicated to sexual assault. And I say the reason they're a smaller number is because most individuals who are seeking assistance for sexual assault want assistance right now. And that call usually turns into an in-person and the in-person on. And so we have the 24-hour crisis line that serves all of Josephine County. And again, we take about 4,000 calls annually to that crisis line. We also offer court assistance. So every morning we have an advocate at the courthouse to help folks with restraining orders. The window opens at 8 o'clock for restraining orders and closes at 8:30. And it's a pretty thick packet. And if you're not really familiar with it or know what you're doing, it could be hard to fill that out in that amount of time. And people who may need to see a judge that day and can't wait for another day, we're there to help them get through that and make sure that their restraining order gets that their application gets in and that they get to see a judge that day.
Are you able to respond to calls that you receive after hours, like 1 o'clock in the morning? Is an advocate on call, so to speak?
Yes, we offer 24-hour crisis response to law enforcement and to the hospital. So if you call our crisis line after hours, it's actually going to bounce up to Portland and call to safety. Can talk to you about your situation and triage your situation on the phone. If it's a need for an emergency response, they'll bounce that back to one of our advocates who's actually on call, and they'll respond to the emergency crisis. And so we do offer 24/7 response. I can't say enough about our intervention advocates. And when you were asking me earlier about what draws me to the work, being able to help people in their moment of greatest need is like the driving force behind what we do. And so our advocates and our intervention team are really the heartbeat. If we couldn't meet people in that moment, it would be hard to do the rest of the work we do. So I'm really proud of that. It's a very small team and a very dedicated team, and they work hard, and they're on rotation for that 24-hour response all the time. And so I just can't say enough about them and our intervention program. Our shelter program, again, it's a 14-bed home in an undisclosed residential location in Grants Pass. It's full right now. Unfortunately, it stays full quite a bit. We shelter any survivor that needs shelter, emergency safe shelter, and their children. And it's generally a two-week stay. It starts as a two-week stay. But we also understand that there are a lot of barriers in our area around achieving housing and achieving stability. And what we do is we give people time to come in and relax and catch their breath and begin the healing process. And then we kind of start a goal-oriented process of, okay, so what are the next steps to achieving self-sufficiency? So after the healing begins, how can we get back up on our own two feet? And our shelter advocates are just stellar at helping our shelter clients connect with other community resources that can help them with whether it's attaining work or achieving housing or getting childcare, or maybe we just need to get our ID to start, you know, a driver's license or something like that. And so our shelter advocates are really awesome at helping those clients begin that process. As long as someone's working on those things, I don't know that we've ever exited anyone to the street. We've always made a way to keep people, and some people have a lot more barriers than others, and some people take a little bit longer than others. And so we work really hard to accommodate folks who might need a little extra time or stay. And so we've had longer stays for sure. But again, having kind of that timeline when someone first enters helps us kind of map a way forward in terms of what's the next step. Where do we go from here? Because it is, sadly, it's an emergency safe shelter, and there's limited transitional housing, if any, in the county. And so making sure, we were even talking about, now that we're at capacity, what happened is Community Works in Jackson County has Dunhouse. Dunhouse is closed right now for a remodel. And so that really puts a stressor on all the area shelters for domestic violence and sexual assault, because we definitely picked up a few from Jackson County. So the question that we're wrestling with right now is, even when we're at capacity, how do we make sure we have a safe space for that person that cannot go home tonight? Where do we put them? And so, very much like Illinois Valley Safe House Alliance, we have some hotel motel funds, some emergency funds like that. It's hard to put someone in a hotel and not know what the longer range plan is. That's not sustainable, really. And so so we try and do that when we know, hey, here's somebody who can relocate, and Roseburg has something open at BPA. Mm-hmm. And so let's put them in a hotel for a couple mm-hmm. days, get them settled, and get them a bus ticket to BPA. Yeah. You know, so those are the kind of the things. It's a great partnership, I would say, up and down I-5, and even with Eastern Oregon. I mean, with Klamath Falls and my sister's place, and out towards Coos Bay. I mean, we just have a great relationship, and all the shelters are really trying to work together to make sure that even if we're at capacity, if there's a possibility for relocation, or if it's even safer to relocate, then let's get them on over there and let them, you know, let them settle up over there. And so it's a great network across the state, I'd say, even.
And are people, are victims welcome to come back if they have gone through the shelter at one point and then perhaps they've returned to an abuser, or perhaps they have, I don't know, lost their job or something? Are they eligible to come back for a second or even a third stay?
So there's a wildly varying statistic that says it takes 7 to 11 times for someone to leave an abusive situation for the final time. And we know that sometimes, especially the barriers that exist in our community, actually drive people back into unhealthy situations. What we do is that's not for us to dictate. You know, only the survivor knows what's best for them in that moment. We support them as much as we can. We try and give them as many resources as we can. But ultimately, a lot of folks do return to a former abuser. Some of those situations, thank goodness, work out pretty well. Some don't. But what we try and make sure to communicate anytime anybody leaves our shelter or our programming in any capacity, if you ever need us again, we're right here. There is no shame. There is no judgment. Please call us. We want to serve you. And so we know sometimes that those individuals, I mean, it can be heartbreaking sometimes because you know they're going back to an unhealthy situation, and it's probably just a matter of time. It's not an if they're going to call us, but when. And we just try and make sure that we communicate as openly and as genuinely as possible. We're here if you need us. You can always call us.
I think that, excuse me, I've spoken to some people who have used domestic violence services, and I think that's a very important thing for people to always understand, is that when you call, you're in a situation and you call a domestic violence program, you're not going to get judged, you're not going to get told what to do, you're going to get listened to and respected and helped as well as is possible to help you. And I know in my past, I've had friends who didn't want to go to a shelter, or didn't want to call into a program because they were afraid that people were going to, you know, judge them in some way, in some harsh way. So it's really important to get that out there, that that's not what you're about.
This is so well stated. You know, it's really important that we never get out ahead of our survivors. I think that what we try and help folks identify is that when you're in crisis, sometimes you have really limited kind of tunnel vision. You kind of get like there's no path forward, or this is the only path forward. And so what we try and do as an agency is we try and set a buffet of options. Like, let us set the table for you. Here's a buffet of options. We don't know what's right for you. Only you know what's right for you. But whatever you choose, we'll help serve that up, and we'll make it the best possible opportunity we can, given our connections in the community and the resources that we're aware of. The other piece that I'd really like to add to your comment about, not only do people feel judged, they feel like if I call this agency, somehow that's going to trigger law enforcement, or that's going to trigger a whole roller coaster of things that I'm not going to be in control of. And I'd like to tell people, and I want to make sure people understand this, domestic violence agencies in Oregon specifically, and other places in the state, we have a very strong law around advocate privilege. And what that means is, advocates are not mandatory reporters, because a lot of victims get caught up in things that might make them vulnerable to like law enforcement or child welfare or things like that. And that's used as a source of power and control over them. Well, if you report me, or if you tell me, then I'm going to turn you in for this. They can call and speak to an advocate and tell an advocate the whole story. One is they can call a crisis line and never reveal who they are. But even if they do, the advocate is bound by law not to repeat that information. And even in our office, we use a need to know basis for material in our office even. So Lindsay, who works prevention, really has no interaction with the intervention side. So when intervention folks are working out a particular crisis, she doesn't need to know any personally identifying information, any of that kind of stuff. So we practice like this really high level of confidentiality. So people can call, and that law was actually passed because people will call and access resources when that idea that they're going to be caught up in something is removed. And Oregon actually ran the only study on that. And the number of people who actually call services when they know that it's confidential increased dramatically. And the number of folks who then turned around and accessed those resources increased even more. And so we know that advocate privilege is so special and it's so important. And what we want to make sure is, just because you call a DV or an SA agency, a domestic violence or a sexual assault agency in your community, that does not get the ball rolling on anything that you don't want. It is a confidential call, and you can do that without fear of repercussions.
Important information. It's time for another break. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about how you deal with, especially the intervention people, but the shelter people as well, as workers, how you deal with the weight and the pain of, you mentioned that a little bit about, you know, when people go back to an abuser or something. How do you deal with that, and what kinds of things do you do to keep yourself healthy and that kind of thing? And I want to talk a little bit about the power of stories versus statistics, because I think we're all a little inundated by statistics. So we're going to go ahead and take a break. One thing I want to do is remind everybody that support for KXCJ comes from the Painted Rooster Bakery and Farm Stand, situated in the newly renovated Kirbyville Farm Building at 23790 Redwood Highway. They offer stone hearth baked artisanal breads, hot pocket sandwiches, espresso, local farm goods, and handmade ice cream. The Painted Rooster is open 7:30 to 5:30 Monday through Saturday, and they're closed on Sundays. We'll be right back.
Day. I only find it slips away to gray. Now they bring me pain. Can't you read? Living reflections from a dream. Her love, she was my queen, and now a thousand years between.
Hey, welcome back to Valley News and Views here on KXCJLP 105.7 FM, your community radio station. Right before the break, we were talking about how this kind of work can be extremely difficult and emotionally challenging for the workers. So I want to talk about what each of you do to keep centered and healthy in spite of the devastation, misery, and pain that you're immersed in every day.
You know, that's a really good question, seeing as oftentimes when we tell people what our profession is, the automatic response is either, wow, thank you for what you do, or that must be a very hard job. And it is. I am currently blessed with not as high as stress as the intervention advocates may have. Prior to this position, though, I was working in a different position with very high stress, very high burnout. So that is a big risk when it comes to working in these positions while helping people who are in crisis, is to watch ourselves and to keep ourselves from burning out. So something that I do a lot of, I try to get out in nature as much as possible. It's very calming and relaxing to me. Writing, just a lot of self-care and recognizing when you need a break is huge. With the profession, a lot of individuals have bleeding hearts and they just want to keep helping everybody and keep helping everybody, and they forget about themselves. And eventually that becomes harmful to the clients that we're serving, because we can't differentiate between our own struggles and the struggles that we're trying to help them address. So those are a few things that I do. I know Ray likes music shows.
So, I think it's awesome, because you go to training sometimes and they want, you know, they'll have all these self-care kind of activities. And I'm like, those aren't really things that appeal to me. So it's kind of interesting. I think self-care is a very personal thing, and it's one that you have to find for yourself. in the work itself, like in the office and in our time of doing the work, what I try and focus on is that I'm not in this alone. Like, I have an amazing team. And so it's a matter of getting up and going down the hallway and lounging on the couch for 5 or 10 minutes and just talking about our dogs or our cats or what we did last week or whatever. And just having like time out throughout the day to like just check in with each other. And we try and make that time with each other in our office. And we try and create spaces in our office that's very collaborative and brings people together and not allow people to kind of isolate in their office. I would say one of the things that doesn't work at WCST is the Lone Ranger idea. And so I think that does a lot of good for us while we're at work. And then away from work, as much as possible, and I know our advocates are on call sometimes, and that can be very tough and very stressful, but away from work, I try and encourage everybody to put it down, like in some capacity, turn it off, put it down, get away from it. A lot of our advocates love the outdoors. We trade Netflix stories. I love music personally. You'll have music in my office, or I go to shows in the area or even out to Portland and beyond. I love fly fishing, a lot of individual activities. I love just spending time with my partner and relaxing. And so, but I just encourage our staff to find what it is that really helps bring them down and mellow them out and chill them in a healthy way that they can come back and really engage in the work in a meaningful way and in our team, as a member of our team. And so, there's no like singular answer for like, oh, this is how you work in domestic violence and sexual assault and stay healthy. It's just making space for our staff to find their own niche. We're a very pet friendly office. So we have lots of dogs visiting on a regular basis. We have a resident hamster named Tessa Howard that's in a ball and runs around the office most of the day. And that's just, it's just relief. It's just kind of like when you're feeling really overwhelmed and really tired, get down on the floor and play with Tessa Howard. I mean, how much better can it be, you know?
Yeah. And so those are great ideas, you know. And we don't have very much time left. We've just got a few minutes left, but I wanted to briefly touch on the idea of how important stories are in reaching out with a message of safety for all women around the globe, in all different cultures. Is there one particular message that you feel is impactful for people who aren't really involved in domestic violence? They haven't had a brush with it. They don't really understand it. Is there one idea that you have found to be effective in getting across your messages?
Well, a lot of times when I go out and do community outreach or I'm talking to other individuals, domestic violence really touches everybody in some capacity. So if our neighbor is experiencing domestic violence in unique and odd ways, it affects the whole community. And so it's not something that we can just kind of close our eyes to and say, oh, well, that doesn't affect me, whether it's on the healthcare side of things, whether it's just on general safety in our community, whether it's healthcare in our community, whether it's social service in our community, the effects of domestic violence are threaded throughout the community. And so no one is ultimately clear of domestic violence. What I prefer not to go to is like, oh, let's be passionate about domestic violence because they're our sisters and our mothers and our daughters, because that's a very it's a very limited way of looking at it. It's a very limited way of addressing the problem. As much as I want to say on a human level, you know, they're human. Everybody is human beings and instilled with certain rights and certain values. And so from a human standpoint, can we just be nice to each other and not be abusive towards each other and make it more, have that more global feel? It's pretty easy to say, well, it doesn't affect me. It's not my wife, not my sister, not my mother. You know, we've never had this problem in our family. But on a human level, don't we want our community to be safe and welcome and healthy for everyone?
Yes, we do. May all women seeking support have their needs met all around the globe. That's what you're working for.
Yeah.
And when we reach that place, it's going to be a very different world, isn't it?
Put me out of business, please.
Exactly.
Be all right.
Well, thank you so much, you guys. We have been speaking with Women's Crisis Support Team members, Ray Dinkins and Lindsay Welesek. And we're very happy that you guys came to the Valley to speak to us today. I want to remind people about next week's program. Next week's edition of Valley News and Views is going to feature an interview with K.S. Wild. So tune in next Tuesday from 6 to 7 p.m. for the Valley's only local news show. Remember, you can email us your questions ahead of time and your comments for K.S. Wild at news@kxcj.org. Or you can call in during the show by calling 541-592-5005. Ray and Lindsay, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.